Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock on a radiant Friday morning here, and not so radiant in Studio A. There isn't a window to be seen. But lucky you, it's the Roundtable panel today. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, if you wish to weigh in on any of the events you hear us trying to skate through. This morning, Alan Shartok is on the panel. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, sir, to you.
You are looking in fine fettle.
I'm wearing a T-shirt today in honor of Dress Down Friday.
Oh, is it Dress Down Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
No, you are, of course, in a starched white shirt and a tie.
Right you are. And Mike Spain also looking dapper today. Mike is the associate editor of the Times Union. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. I didn't get the memo about Dress Down Friday, so I'm wearing a tie.
Well, in your job, I think you need a tie and a shirt.
Are you saying that newspapers are more important than radio?
No, not at all. I just think more formal. I just think they're more formal. And, you know, it's a breed that has not been doing well as of late. And so that's why.
Wow, I think that was a shot, Mike. And the show has barely begun.
That's why they have to dress like they used to dress.
I don't wear a visor.
No. No, but he still keeps a bottle of booze in the lower right drawer of the desk, as all good newsmen do. And perhaps the nicest person on the panel today, and smartest, and with impeccable taste in music, Barbara Smith, welcome back.
Hi, Ray.
Nice to have
you
here.
Lots of hyperbole.
Well, you know what? I think it's important that we balance out these two with somebody who knows what they're talking about, so works out really well.
We'll see if that's the case.
No shot at you, sir. I didn't mean anything by that. The lawyer for U.S. Olympic swimmer James Fegan says he'll pay about $10,800 and then leave Brazil following the robbery scandal involving the U.S. swim team. The story gets weirder and weirder. The attorney said this morning, under an agreement reached with a Brazilian judge, Fegan will donate the money to an institution, which I believe to mean a charity, and depart. Fegan's teammates, Gunnar Bentz and Jack Conger, left Brazil last night after giving testimony to police. Police say U.S. swimmer Ryan Lochte and the three others had not been held at gunpoint, as Lochte initially claimed. Instead, Brazilian police say the U.S. athletes were intoxicated, vandalized a bathroom, then were questioned by armed guards before they paid for the damage and left.
Do we know how they vandalized it? Do we know exactly? They rip off the toilet seat or something like that? Do we know what
it sounded happened? Like it was a door. I think they mentioned, didn't they mention a door?
Yeah, there's some video, and I don't know. Does it matter at this point?
Oh, no, it matters a great deal, don't you see?
No.
Oh, okay.
What I see is guys who win medals bring great honor upon themselves and their country and then do something
mess
colossally
up.
Stupid.
Yeah.
That's what I see.
And then
I
really
that sums
up.
It up.
That's why when I see something like in the paper when they catch somebody and they say the 23-year-old man or the 19-year-old man, I say, that right. ain't a man. You know,
well, some of these guys are a little older than that, though. What are the ages of some of these fellows? I think it's a little
closer. Pull that microphone a little closer. He's a newspaper man. He's not used to microphones.
Oh, yes.
There you go. That sounds better.
That sounds much better.
I'm not sure of their age, but they're young adults.
Upper 20s or beyond. But the what they have given away here is any opportunity to rest a contract to represent a sporting goods company or do television commentary next Olympic. I mean, they've really closed the door.
They messed up. And it was a panic thing at the last minute. I'm sure that's what happened. As soon as they got confronted, they thought they may as well make up a story.
So let's make up a story where people who are dressed up as police or possibly police held us at gunpoint.
I believe they were security people from the gas station
that
had been being.
Yeah, so it was the guys who were holding them accountable who were there. They were claiming that. But you know, it's interesting that the people from the committee, the Olympic committee, apologized on behalf of the Olympic group, and then you heard from the other side. From officials in Rio who said, come on, they're a bunch of kids, people make mistakes. There was sort of an accommodation made here. I thought that was classy.
You know, Mike brought up something, and I've wondered this as I've watched the Olympics, and I've watched more than I thought I would watch. Several ads feature Olympians. What are the rules? Now, in the old days, you were an amateur. You didn't take this sort of endorsement money. Can you do that now?
Oh, yes. It's dramatically different than it had been from the days of Jim Thorpe. Don't you remember Jim Thorpe in the 1930s?
And we know why he lost it.
Well, he was a Native American, and many believe that was partly behind it. But he was also had taken some money to run in a county fair race or something like that, if I'm remembering the Burt Lancaster portrayal of him in the movie.
I thought his name was baseball or something, right. But I don't remember.
But anyway, he, you know, we've long passed the time when only amateurs, those who were not paid as professionals, as athletes, were long past that time. And it's too bad.
Look at the
but it's very expensive to train.
Look at the basketball.
Right, with the dream teams.
Top athletes.
Right.
Yeah.
Why is it too bad, Mike?
Well, it does seem that if you could successfully raise the money elsewhere and support an Olympic team that was not professional athletes, but amateur athletes, and it played against amateur athletes across the globe, you'd have some purity to it. But it's been muddied for decades now, and then the introduction of steroids or the recognition that steroids are being used, has also been a blemish on the whole thing. But I, like you, Ray, I watched it more than I thought I was going to watch.
How about you, Barbara? Did you watch?
Not at all.
Really?
Me neither.
Well, the thing is, I plan to catch up on the women's gymnastics on demand.
Yeah. The U.S. team was amazing.
Right. I was away last week for most of the week, so that might account for some of it. But I never really watched the Summer Olympics that conscientiously. I love the winter ones.
Well, John checked in and said something I was wondering about and said, the lying swimmers should have their medals taken away. They dishonored themselves and the United States.
Okay, but should they have the medals taken away? This was not really in the event, per se. I don't know. Barbara, what do you think? I see you're shaking your head.
I don't think they should be, because unless it was... Did they take away medals if somebody's involved in a homicide, for example? Did Oscar Pistorius lose his medals, or, you know?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Right, yes. Well, I'm just pulling them out of the air. But
that's why you're here today. Our email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. If you have the answer to the questions, we clearly do not. The men's basketball team plays today. And talk about professionals. You know, back in the old days, right, you saw the Russian hockey team, and these guys were for all intents and purposes, professionals. That's what they did for a living in communist Soviet Union. And we always said, oh, gosh, our amateur guys have no chance against the Russians. Well, in 1980, we beat them.
Right.
We made history.
But things have changed since then. And so our basketball team now, entirely a bunch of professionals, they're very good, but they'll have a tough time against Spain today. Hmm. It'll be a tough match. Alan, you'll be watching that?
No.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and shift gears as we've exhausted sports here on the Roundtable panel. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Ghent, New York. Early childhood through grade 12, within a 700-acre biodynamic farm setting, a place to study, learn, and grow, accepting applications, nurturing living connections, hawthornevalleyschool.org. Bedard Brothers, featuring 7 brands in 1 Berkshire County location for over 55 years. Sales and service of new or certified pre-owned cars or trucks. It's hard to beat Bedard. BedardBrothers.com. The Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook. Author Deborah Kramer presents her book, The Narrow Edge, A Tiny Bird, An Ancient Crab, and An Epic Journey, tonight, 7 p.m., caryinstitute.org. And Trinity Woodworking, local makers of custom kitchens, built-ins, bookshelves, and cabinetry, from design and build through the installation. Made in New York for over 30 years, trinity-woodworking.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined today by Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, and Barbara Smith. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org if you want to, and keep them short, folks. Otherwise, you don't have a prayer of getting on. It could be a Donald Trump first. The Republican presidential candidate says he regrets some of the comments he's made that may have caused people pain. Speaking at a rally in Charlotte, North Carolina last night, Trump didn't specify what comments he was referring to, but he said, quote, too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. With 80 days left until the election, Trump has been trailing Democrat Hillary Clinton in preference polls in key battleground states. The Hillary Clinton campaign says Donald Trump was just reading words from a teleprompter. The irony, of course, being very rich there, as Hillary reads a lot of words from teleprompters.
Is that a commentary?
That's very true.
Well, I see. However, you're answering, for the forces of Trump, right?
Why?
Well, because you're, instead of just saying it, you're saying, of course, you remind us that they both read from a teleprompter.
Do they not, sir?
Well, they do. I mean, there's no question.
But Donald Trump had prided himself as not reading from teleprompters previously and had chided her for it, and now he is being scripted the same way that he's accused her of being scripted. So there is a little bit of chutzpah.
Chutzpah. Well said. Right. Can you spell that?
Chutzpah. And one other thing that we should address, and that the overall attempt here is to convert this guy who is seen as out of control by so many people. And regular Republican voters, and we've seen this in the polls, have turned from him. So now they bring in a new team, and the new team says, you know, we're going to reinvent you. Now, do they have time to reinvent them? You bet they do. The fact of the matter is that a British election takes about a month, and we have 3 months here to do it. People's memories are short. NPR had people on this morning who said they weren't going to vote for him, but when they heard his new conversion speech, said, yes, now I can vote for him. So there are people who will be convinced.
Barbara, you're shaking your head again.
So ridiculous. Thanks for letting people know what I'm doing in the studio.
Well,
without me speaking. No, I mean that.
By the way, you can watch the
exactly.
The proceedings here, WAMC.org.
No, because I believe that the person we saw for these innumerable number of months is the person who actually is running. The fact that he has this new staff that is instructing him about what he needs to do to persuade voters who are not in his camp, that's just politics as far as I'm concerned. I think I wish that American voters did not have short memories, because like any given day of his campaign is just a travesty. He started off calling Mexicans rapists, and then it went downhill from there. So
and women,
yeah, oh, everybody,
and
everybody.
But that's not my question. My question, I think you and I are probably going to vote the same way in this election. But my question is, will this conversion work? You know, can you take this guy who has said all of that stuff? Now, if I'm the Democrats, Barbara, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all those things I have pictures of and play him over and over and over again. Say, now, this is the guy, so that you prevent him from recreating himself. But I do think that whoever's calling the shots here, in fact, the newspapers were saying for a while, and the commentators were saying that the selection of the new team was that they were going to let Trump be Trump, but apparently not.
That's the way they're portraying it, but this is a real reboot. I watched the whole speech last night that he made in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is the first speech he's made since he has brought on the new campaign staff. And Kellyanne Conway, a very respected GOP pollster who herself presents very well and is extremely articulate,
indeed,
is clearly having influence over him. While saying we're letting Trump be Trump, they're making Trump be the polished candidate
reasonable
they want him to be. And it was a really hard-hitting speech that took advantage of the gaffes that Hillary Clinton has committed and presented them in a very compelling way. If he could stay on this message, I think the Clinton people will be restless. Without agreeing or disagreeing with what he's saying, he didn't go off point. He talked about his own gaffes, saying I can't be politically correct, and people cheered him. And, you know, I've said some things, and he kind of smiled and made this kind of little kid's grin when he said, and I've probably said some things I shouldn't have said, and I'm hurt people, and he never said I apologize, and I regret that. Believe it or not, folks, I regret that. You know, and even there, it seemed disingenuous. It was difficult for him to mouth those words. But if he stays on message and follows the teleprompter, which is a good question whether he can, I think this is, you know, 80 days is a long time.
Yes,
I agree with you, Alan.
Yes, and not only that, but you've noticed that in the polls that are, you know, what is 360, what's the name of the?
Nate
Silver.
Nate Silver.
Well, Nate Silver. Well, then the aggregate of polls, he's been going up a point every day anyway.
Yeah.
Now you got 80 days. That'll do it.
There will be ebbs and flows. I mean, there always are, right?
Right.
I don't know. I'm saying, and I've said it all along, that you cannot take this election for granted because the New York Times tells you that that Hillary's got an 88% chance of winning, and Trump has a 11 or 12 or 13% chance of winning. You can't do it, and they know it, and the Democrats understand that. This is when it really gets going, especially because people don't pay attention till after Labor Day.
So I have a couple of things to say. I did not hear the speech. I only heard excerpts. His tone of voice was quite different than the usual snarl and put down, you know, can't even stand the sound of his usual voice because it's so condescending and so hostile. One of the things that he said is that because he is not about political correctness, or because he hasn't been about political correctness, that's where some of the criticism has come from. There is so much mistaken understanding of what political correctness, in quotes, actually is. Political correctness, as they see it, is doing what those other people say that we have to do so that we don't offend anyone. From my perspective, as a person who is targeted by political, quote, incorrectness, I feel like what he is justifying is hate speech. He is so condescending and insulting, and it gets to profound issues. It's not just about my feelings. Feelings be damned. It's about what you think about whole swaths of the human population and whether you think they have any rights at all.
That's activist Barbara Smith. We're also joined on the panel today by associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and WAMC's Alan Chartok. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. I'm sure we'll get some letters. We'll pick this topic up and read your letters coming up after news from the BBC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning, 9:34, just about anyway. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel today. Activist Barbara Smith, associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and WAMC's Alan Chartok on the panel. You at home always join in, or sometimes join in, by emailing roundtable@wamc.org. And, Alan, we have email today.
We do. We have a lot of email, as a matter of fact. Bill says... Trump's sincerity or insincerity will be proven at the presidential debate when Hillary defies him. And then we've heard from Martha, who says, good morning. As a teacher, I often refer to the behavior, the Olympians, goal setting, steadfastness, teamwork, improving one's performance, etc. U.S. medalists going into the bathroom of a business of the hosting country, vandalizing it, and then lying about it demonstrates every behavior I'm working against. Carol says, our friend Carol, Trump was telling the absolute truth when he said he regrets what he said. It has COST capitalized, cost him. Ronnie says, I disagree with the purity of amateur athletics in the Olympics. From the very first contest, it was always the best against the best, whether noble or vox populus participants. That's from Ron.
I don't understand. What is he saying? That back in like ancient times, that things were as they should be? What is he saying?
I think he's saying that the professionals are the best now. They might as well be there as well.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, I certainly agree with that, by the way.
Right. If an athlete is it isn't like somebody just leaves his office, goes and competes in the Olympics, and goes back to his day job. I mean, these are people who train devote their life. So really, I don't really disagree with him. There just seemed to be a purity that maybe was a myth before.
Don writes a very interesting letter. He says, Trump's reboot. Trump won't retract any specific things he said because he doesn't want to alienate the people he got on board with those statements. That's exactly right.
I thought that.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
And then Dean says, to me, it's dishonest to try to make Trump electable. Don't they know he'll be the same old Trump sooner or later? Unfortunately, if it happens after he's elected, it is disgusting. Anything to win the election. Yes, that's true, Deanne. Anything to win the election. And it is also true that he will not fool you, perhaps, but he'll fool some people. We already have some overnight polls that are showing some African-Americans have changed their minds based on the speech. So it isn't Allen that you should blame for saying this is a possibility. It's just possible that they know what they're doing, and they do know what they're doing.
Well, I think blaming Allen's always a good option.
Yeah, sure, I know you do.
Well, Trump reached out to African Americans, and polls have been showing him tracking about 0 to 1% of African Americans supporting him. So what does he have to lose to reach out to them?
Exactly. But,
and he said the same thing to them. He said, you know,
may I read it?
Right, you may.
Quote,
please.
What do you have to lose by trying something new, end quote, he asked, specifically of black voters with whom he is polling at a dismal 1% in some surveys. Well, I heard that this morning, and I thought, everything?
Like what, Barbara?
Well, the thing is, I've said this to friends of mine. Notice how he virtually has nothing to say and has had nothing to say during the entire campaign about his policies and plans for the African-American community. And then my joke is, so watch out, because given all the things that he's saying about what he's going to do to everybody else, he can't even speak about what he plans to do with and for us. So that must be really, really dire. But I think that he has no commitment at all to a civil rights agenda. Most of the major black civil rights organizations meet in the summertime. The NAACP definitely met. I don't know if the Urban League met. I believe they did. He went to none of them. He does not care about connecting with African American thought leaders, African American grassroots individuals. He just doesn't care. And one of the things I heard on Morning Joe this morning that I thought was really stupid, which is as always, not as always about everything said on that show, although a lot, but this misunderstanding of what racism is. Joe was saying, I've known him for so long, I don't know anybody who really knows him who's ever heard him say anything racist. So the fact that he's running this campaign that's all embroiled with racism, and I'm thinking, hello, what do you think it means about someone that they're willing to run a national campaign for president using racist tropes, huh?
Yeah,
what does that mean? You're racist. You decided that.
You know, Barbara, you know, I was watching Morning Joe this morning. I can't stand the guy, to be honest with you. But, you know, he really was beginning to sour on Trump. But like a lot of the guys like Morning Joe, these sort of Republican types, he really wanted to be able to support anybody against Hillary.
That's
and
right.
And so he's going to use the, and this is why what I've been saying I think is correct, that if you see them coming back, they are coming back because they desperately want to have something to hang their hat on, and this speech gave them the opportunity to do that.
That's right, and it was a comprehensive speech. He went after teachers who have tenure. He promoted charter schools, appealing to, you know, a certain segment of the audience. Yes.
Time out, though, I watched a fair portion of the speech. It was very vague as far as the actual details. Now, you bring up the charter schools, and he mentioned increasing charter schools and going after the power of the teachers' unions.
From a
strictly conservative standpoint, conservatives might say, well, you know, that's a state's issue. We've been trying to get the federal government out of education for a long time now. You're going to go in and put your iron thumb on everything?
No, I think he was just touching buttons. I think he was just trying. I mean, this almost was the speech he should have given at the convention. You know, that just comprehend. I mean, it's the first after his reboot, you know, and the guy from Breitbart, Bannon, I can't think of his first name. But
Stephen.
Bannon. And this Kellyanne Conway is, you know, if they're able to keep controlling him and sort of, you know, running him, you know, telling him what to do, and he stays on message, and she's going to be traveling with him and telling him how to respond to the questions, et cetera, it could be a very, very close race. The issue, though, is whether people are ready to forget all the things that he's done up to now and whether he hasn't already spoiled it for himself and whether he can control himself and not lose his temper. And you know the Democrats are going to bait him with ads and with pointed messages and certainly at the debate. So if he can keep his cool, it's going to be I think, a closer race than people
imagine. Absolutely. Tom wrote a note. It says, why does Trump believe that changing his brand will trick us into voting for him? Because it very well can. There you go. I mean,
people have short memories, unfortunately, in politics.
Well, it's funny how a matter of days ago, all the experts said, okay, this is now
He's
over.
Done.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And now, two days later, it's a horse race again. I say there are a lot of variables still to play out, and we really don't know.
There are the unforeseen events that could tip it one way or another. I've said this before, which are events like terrorism.
The October surprise.
Attacks, et cetera. Yeah.
You know, it seems to me that I think, in general, in looking at TV and radio, people in the media are still stunned that a year ago everybody said, well, clearly he has no chance of getting the nomination.
Right.
And I think that is still setting in for so much of the punditry out there, all the pundits out there.
Well, the fact is, he speaks to people who have been disenfranchised, and he portrays himself as the outsider who wants to replace the establishment, and that is very appealing to people who are unhappy with where they are in life.
And why isn't he releasing his tax returns? He's not releasing his tax returns because it might give way to the lie. So in other words, it might expose the lie. Look, this is a real estate developer, Mike, who takes advantage, I am sure, of all those breaks that all that money going to politicians has come up with. In other words, people know that a lot of people don't pay any taxes or very little taxes, and that isn't the message that will go well with the forgotten middle class, is it?
No, it isn't, and that's the speculation, is that he hardly has paid any taxes. The other speculation is it will reveal that he's not as wealthy as he portrays himself to be.
Here's one for Barbara. Jamie writes, the act of the swimmers lying about their experiences in Rio is similar, albeit not completely parallel to the U.S. Albany bus incident. Now, you'll remember there were a small group of African-American women turned out to lie about having been racially approached. But it was lying is lying. I guess that's the point.
I'm not sure that every one of those cases has been resolved.
That's right. There's still some that may go to trial.
Right, yeah. Indeed. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm supposed to say about that.
That people, when they get arrested, sometimes have differing stories that they tell
police.
And
these people actually were younger.
Now, were the Olympians weren't arrested, though, were they?
They were, yeah, I think they...
Well, they were hauled off the plane
for
questioning.
Yeah. I mean, whether they were actually formally arrested, I don't know.
Right. And also, you're right, Barbara, this is not the same thing. Taking, messing up a wall in a bathroom or a stall is not the same thing as making a claim that is not true. Although both of them hurt the principals from whom they come.
My understanding, there was definitely physical contact between these groups, too.
You mean in on the bus?
Right. So the thing is, I mean, isn't generally there's a higher level of sanctions against crimes? For crimes against persons or whatever.
Violence. Sure.
Yeah, it was really, it's very complicated. And I have to say, very painful.
Sure.
And as I said, my understanding is that the cases are, not all the cases are resolved at this point.
It is the Roundtable Panel on WAMC coming up on 9:45. You can join the conversation by emailing roundtable@wamc.org. Barbara Smith is here, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. Binghamton University, offering graduate degrees in 90 areas, including engineering, finance, social work, nursing, and the arts and sciences. Binghamton.edu. Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, a historic bed and breakfast featuring heated pool, rose gardens, fountains, sitting areas, 1.5 blocks from the Saratoga racetrack, uniongables.com. And SoCo Creamery, featuring blueberry honey lavender ice cream with wild blueberries from Maine, local Berkshire honey, and New England dairy, SoCoCreamery.com.
rarely I keep the bumper music short, but Wayne Shorter? Come on, Alan. You got a lot of Wayne Shorter records in your collection, right? What?
Why do you keep bringing up the word short or shorter?
No, it's
that's
Wayne.
That's his name.
Wayne Shorter.
No, I know
one of the greats. One of the greats.
I know his name. But somehow, Ray always wants to get to my height, and it's not right of him.
You know there's a word for that.
Paranoid?
Sizist. Have you ever heard it?
But I'm not.
Sizist.
Your Honor, I object.
Sizism.
Denial.
It's not true. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. It's the Roundtable panel, and Blessed Relief is straight ahead, only 12 minutes left of the panel. Any emails this morning, Alan?
There are more, yeah. Thank you, boss. Rose says, Dear Roundtable, you might be interested in the phrase political correctness and its use in the U.S. In the early 1990s, I worked in a print shop in Michigan where I printed a booklet for the fraternity that bragged it had most of the living presidents as alumni, and then so on, but it goes way over the amount of time.
The main rule of thumb is try to keep the emails brief, one idea, and get
your main thought into the first sentence. Make sure the sentence has a period somewhere in it.
Because you're not out to offend people, but you have to move along and read a lot of email.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you are out to offend me on many occasions, but not the listeners.
That's true.
Right.
Okay. So our friend Ellen says, best predictor of presidential success could be very well how a candidate runs his or her campaign. It's a glimpse into someone as a leader and his or her judgment about the people selected to run and manage the operation. They've made a change here. Does that speak well of Donald Trump? I don't know.
Twice he's had to dismiss his leaders of the campaign. The first time, Corey Lewandowski was alienating people. He was pushing reporters around.
It was a tad abrasive.
Right. A tad abrasive, yes. And then Manforth, it turns out he's just deeper and deeper into this whole thing after representing Ukraine and certain interests, political interests in Ukraine. He may have violated some federal laws by accepting payments. So what will happen now? I think that Kellyanne Conway is pretty respected and pretty clean. But, in a couple of weeks, if he's replacing somebody there, it's going to be bad for him.
Okay, so Lily says, I find it appalling that an Olympic spokesman urged the public to cut Ryan Lochte and company some slack, said they were just kids making a mistake, and yet nobody defended Gabby Douglas when she was getting virtually stoned on the internet for not smiling enough. White male privilege at play as always. Billy wants to know, the uniform for men, suit, tie, shirt, why does this never change, the significance of it? Why women's range of acceptable dress is so great and men's so narrow? Truly, I've searched for some clarification. You guys know everything. Sincerely, Christine.
Well, I usually wear a different tie.
that's a good point.
You have to go back centuries to see men wearing something different than in modern, Western.
On Monday, I'll wear my suit of armor. What do you think about that for the show?
George says, Trump does not speak for or to the disenfranchised. He's speaking for the never enoughers.
It's interesting. He struck a chord with people who felt they have not been represented. That's true. Bernie Sanders.
Deanne wants to make sure I know that she wasn't blaming me for the Trump campaign wanting to get a person elected, no matter what he is really like. And she said, I appreciate you. And I appreciate you, Deanne.
Kumbaya.
I've told you a million times, Raymond, that I love that song.
You like that song?
And I think it's been effectively...
Which version do you like? Kingston Trio?
No, I like Pete's version.
Yeah. Pete's version.
What about Michael Row the Boat Ashore?
I like that,
too. Yeah, you like that one, too?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we could do a little folk sing-along.
First song...
Because Lord knows it ain't working right now.
Donald Trump yesterday gave this speech in Charlotte. Alan, I wonder if he has successfully pivoted, in your opinion, as a political scientist.
I think he has certainly successfully moved his campaign a bit higher. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see that in the polls, because there are a lot of people who just couldn't stand the fact that they were being insulted by him that much. But if he gives them an excuse, there will be a portion of the society that will say, okay, all right, that's good. That's what I wanted to hear already. When Barbara quoted Morning Joe this morning, that was a perfect example. Morning Joe has been very tough on the Donald lately. But I'll tell you right now, you can see him sort of reaching for it. And I think there will be people in America who do exactly that. Yeah. No? Yeah.
I don't know. It comes down to which one we dislike the most when we go to the polls, I guess. And that's what it's turned into. It was already established as that. Now it's even more that way.
Which begs the question, how high is the ceiling for the third party candidates? Now, we see Gary Johnson at 10% today. I think Jill Stein somewhere around 4%, depending on the poll you're
depending
looking at.
Depending on the poll.
Yeah, but given the dislikes for both of these two major party candidates, how high can these third parties go?
Well, every vote for Gary Johnson is regarded as a vote for Hillary Clinton, and every vote for Jill Stein is regarded as a vote for Donald Trump. So it looks like the Democrats are benefiting more or being hurt least by these third-party candidacies.
Now, let me just say, before we get deluged with Jill Stein people, who many of whom listen to this radio station,
That's my opinion that about
yeah, no,
her.
That you were insane. Yeah. No, that is, I think what you said just now is true. But there will be people who will write us and say, nonsense, I'm for Jill Stein because she's the only acceptable alternative, and therefore I'm for her. Right? That's why I was very early into the game interviewing her for a full hour. Somebody just said, well, CNN just did it too. What about that, Alan? And I said, well, yeah, a little late to the game, don't you think? I'm being facetious. Thoughts about today's discussion? Oh, boy. No good. It's way too long. Okay. We're not even going to look at it.
All right. What do you mean?
No, I'm not going to look.
Are we getting to another story?
Great idea. Donald Trump is reportedly headed to Louisiana today. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards is defending the Obama administration's response to the severe flooding in his state. President Obama has received some criticism from some quarters for staying on vacation rather than travel to Louisiana to see the damage firsthand. But Edwards said yesterday he's spoken with the White House daily and has received quick responses for each request he's made to the administration. He noted that Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson was in the state yesterday. And Edwards is not complaining in any way about our federal partnership. Anybody want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think the president should have gone.
He went to New Jersey 4 years ago when Chris Christie was famously wearing that velour pantsuit, walking around on the broken up.
Thanks for reminding us.
Walkway.
He should have gone.
The beach.
I have faced similar crises in my life and decided not to go when I've always a funeral or something like that in a very far off place, and I've always felt sorry about it. But here's a guy, and everybody is looking at whether or not he'll fly in and fly out, and that would be the criteria. And I think he should have gone.
He has gone and made himself physically present at a lot of places that have seen a disaster.
I wonder why he didn't.
Well, he was on vacation.
I know that.
According to Governor Edwards, he said, you know, in a week or two, it'll be a lot easier and there will be a lot less stress on our first responders and police to deal with the necessary people who deal with a presidential visit.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so that was his rationale. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain logic there.
I agree. It's a show. And what do you really want to do? You want to get aid down there.
Yeah.
And it is stressful for a presidential for a community. Just remember when the police officers were tragically killed in Dallas. They had to bring in police from other agencies because there were so many people coming to the funeral and so many famous people coming and politicians coming. I mean, it was a lot of stress at a time when they really wanted to mourn.
Interesting that Donald Trump now, with his new campaign advisors, is making an appearance today.
Yeah, I mean, it's an appearance. It's a campaign appearance.
Well, he's going, obviously, to embarrass the president. Because the president has gotten a lot of criticism, and he says, okay, they take their opportunities where you can find them.
Maybe he'll write a check, and that'll be nice, because some money will go to help somebody for a change.
Well, don't hold your breath on that one.
Yeah. So we heard from Alex, who said, did I hear Alan say it was classy that Rio cut locked and his friend Slack? This is the beginning of how young men start sowing their white male privileged oats. And Locke is 32.
Did you say it was classy?
What'd you say?
Did you say it was classy?
No, I just thought that what was happening was both sides were trying their best to keep it tamped.
Well, Rio certainly had its share of bad press leading up to the Olympics, thankfully, so far they've gone aside from the lime green water in the diving pool.
I do know about that.
All right.
Hey, they tore George Bush apart after Katrina, but have given President Obama a pass on Louisiana.
All right. Well, what do you guys in the press think about that, Mike?
Oh, I think that's unfair. George Bush deserves some blame because he did send people down, but there was a mass miscalculation of sending National Guard troops in to help when they should have gone in to help and they didn't, and the whole thing was botched by FEMA and they had to replace the leadership, et cetera.
Hey, you're doing a hell of a job, Brownie.
Yeah, right. Right. Michael Brown Brown was the FEMA chief, and he was doing a terrible job. And that's the real measurement. It's not whether the president shows up. I mean, Bush went down, did a flyover, and it was symbolic of the president's concern. But, I mean, what's most important is we'll know after we see what the federal government does.
And by the way, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and Betty wrote us, we've already said it, but John Bel Edwards, governor of Louisiana, has asked Obama to delay his visit for a few weeks. He also said Obama has been there with a lot of aid.
By the way, Mike, I forgot to bring this up earlier in the show. You have an interesting piece on SPAC's new...
Right. There's a change in leadership. You know, Marcia White has been the president and CEO for the past 11 years. And yesterday, a new leader, she's retiring, a new leader was introduced, Elizabeth Sobel. She's a veteran of the classical music and recording industry. And she begins on October 1st to be the new leader at SPAC. She'll hold the title of president and CEO. She comes out of a classical music background. It's interesting because Marcia White came in after working in the state Senate, working for the Senate majority, and the former Senate majority leader, Joe Bruno, brought a savvy, understanding how to get an organization that was in the red back in the black.
Yeah.
So now maybe that they're in the black, they can build on it with bringing a classical music expert in.
And we can find out more at the website, which is?
TimesUnion.com.
Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. Activist Barbara Smith, thank you for being here. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, Ray. Same to you.
Alan Shartok, have a wonderful weekend, sir, and we'll see you later on in the office. Maybe have a cup of coffee together, chat a little bit. Nah. Email address is roundtable at wamc.org. Hour 2 coming up.